In the family room of their cozy, small-town Pennsylvania home, Justy and Mike page through a photo album of the twins she gave birth to in 1996. It's the usual stuff. Plump, bewildered babies tucked into colorful outfits, the faces of beaming parents, and, flipping back a few pages, the before pictures of Justy's belly swollen to improbable dimensions.
It was big. The amazing Buddha.
All twins, you know?
Yeah.
Twins, yeah.
And what were they?
Two girls, they were both girls,
6'12 and 5'8.
And it's amazing that the one looks exactly like the mother and the other exactly like the father.
Meaning, Justy and Mike are not the parents. The genetic father and mother live in Beirut, Lebanon. Justy carried and delivered their twin babies for a $10,000 fee. The children were conceived in a laboratory dish, using the sperm and egg of the genetic parents, and then transferred as embryos to Justy's uterus. Experts say this practice, known as gestational surrogacy, is on the rise in the United States. Justy insists that she got involved to help people who desperately want a child. She wasn't lured by the money. And Justy figures she has the body for babies.
I can't say that I love being pregnant. It's just that it's always been easy for me to do. So I feel like if there is somebody out there that should be volunteering their body to do it, I feel like I'm one of those people because so far, all of my pregnancies and my labors and deliveries have been very short and easy.
Justy is a 37-year-old radiology technician. Her husband, Mike, is an executive at a technology company. They have two school-aged kids. As she talks, Justy shifts on the couch to find a more comfortable position. She's pregnant again, this time for an infertile couple who live an hour away in suburban Philadelphia. For Justy, the distinction between being a surrogate who provides her own egg and being what's called a gestational carrier is crucial.
In fact, I don't think that I could be a surrogate. I could not have a part of me out there that I'm not taking care of. I don't even think that I could be an egg donor, because I still know that there's a part of me out there that I don't know what's happening to. But with this, I just feel like an incubator or a house for the baby to grow, and so it to me is completely different.
Advances in medical science that make it possible for a woman to carry a genetically unrelated child are having a profound effect on the practice of commercial surrogacy in the United States. Andrea Braverman is chief psychologist at Pennsylvania Reproductive Associates, the infertility program that Justy works through. Braverman screens candidates to make sure they can handle both the rigors of pregnancy and giving up the child. She says gestational carriers are fast replacing so-called traditional surrogates.
It is a very different psychological hurdle to navigate if you are genetically related to the child you're carrying. And they feel that psychologically they are safer, if you will, if they are very clear saying, hey, it's her egg and his sperm.
No one knows how many babies are born in the U.S. through surrogacy each year. The number is probably in the hundreds. Agencies and brokers have popped up around the country that will match surrogates and clients for a fee. Even with the genetic relationship between the baby and the carrier removed, surrogacy remains one of the most socially controversial solutions to infertility. Longtime surrogacy opponent Andrew Kimbrell, a Washington lawyer and activist, sees no ethical distinction between a surrogate who bears a child with her own egg and a gestational carrier.
It is the attempt to commodify the act of childbearing and to commodify children. It is baby selling, really pure and simple, which we have forbidden in all 50 states, but under the guise of a surrogate contract, tried to legalize.
That's clearly wrong. Baby selling is you have a born child, which is then sold to another person.
John Robertson teaches law and medical ethics at the University of Texas.
Here we're talking about agreements made before conception has even occurred, where there is no existing child. Secondly, the genes, in the case of gestational surrogacy, for that child are being provided by the couple that is hiring the surrogate, thus in a sense it's their genetic child.
Unlike adoption, surrogacy is virtually unregulated. In most states, surrogacy contracts are either unrecognized by the courts or can be difficult to enforce. In a few states, such as Michigan and New York, paid surrogacy is illegal. In a landmark 1993 California case, a gestational carrier wanted to keep the baby, but the courts ruled against her, saying the genetic relationship between the baby and the contracting parents, plus that couple's original intent to raise the child, made them the child's natural parents. Kimbrell deplores the California finding.
We have here, for the first time in the history of Western law, the idea that childbearing does not equal motherhood, that motherhood can be established by contract or by commercial intent, This brings us some unprecedented questions, and I think is both a legal and ethical freefall.
While custody disputes get publicity, they appear relatively uncommon in either gestational or traditional surrogacy. Psychologist Hillary Hannafin adds that probably half the cases involve intended parents who refused to take the baby.
However, most of the couples didn't walk away from the child because they were too busy or preoccupied with traveling or divorce. It usually had some question about prenatal care or the true genetics of the child or whether or not the surrogate had intentionally been negligent during the pregnancy.
Back in Pennsylvania, the baby Justy was carrying during our first interview was born in December. He came prematurely, and the boy spent 10 days in the hospital before growing strong enough to go home. But no form of dispute clouded the relationship between Justy and the intended parents. This is Catherine's house. She's the genetic mother of the baby boy Justy delivered. Catherine and her husband already had a toddler named Emma, who was busy cavorting with a friend. Severe medical problems with Emma's birth nearly killed Catherine and left her with functioning ovaries, but unable to carry another child. As she cradles her new sleeping baby in her arms, Catherine explains it was natural to want Sumner to be her genetic child, but that neither DNA nor gestation are what really makes a mother.
A mother is somebody who takes a child from birth and raises them. I mean, somebody who adopts a baby, they're their mother. I mean, I'm the one who's taken care of him since he was a second old.
This gives me.
Later that afternoon, Justy and Mike drop by Catherine's house to visit, as they often do now. Catherine's husband is away on business. It is Mike who cradles the baby, teasing a pacifier into his fussy mouth. Justy sits across the room next to Catherine, content to watch the baby from afar.
I'm here to see Catherine, actually. I mean, it's nice to see the baby when I come in, but it's more just out of the friendship that we've developed.
The first time she came when he was here, I wasn't sure. Like, I was like, do you want to hold him and feed him? No, that's okay. You can feed him.
The two couples are so close, they've even vacationed together. Catherine says while Justy is sure to be a permanent family friend, they probably won't tell Sumner how he was born until he's a teenager. And Catherine's not too worried about how he'll take it.
When this child, when he is old enough to understand and to know something like that, I can't even imagine how people are going to be having babies. So I really don't think this is going to be that obscure.
The surrogacy, the lawyers, and the medical bills cost Catherine and David more than $40,000. If they can manage it, they might try for a third child. And Justy says she's ready to carry the baby. This is Stephen Smith, Minnesota Public Radio.